Good afternoon. Call the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development to order. It's Wednesday, and before we get going, I have two quick announcements that are related to each other. The first is that we are not going to meet on Friday afternoon. The reason for that is that you, as you heard this morning, we are all now members of an additional committee, which will be meeting on Monday afternoon. That committee is the combination of this committee and our counterparts in the Senate, and we will likely be hearing House Bill 2800, which was first read this morning. That meeting will happen at our regularly scheduled time on Monday, starting at 3, but it may well go quite a bit later. So I hope you will enjoy that time on Friday afternoon, because we may well need it on Monday afternoon and evening. So that's the announcement portion. We have a quick work session to introduce another committee bill, and then we've got an orientation, kind of overview of the Business Development Department. So I will open a work session.
Mr. Shear, you already put your name there.
We have LC 3341, Representative Bentz.
Mr. Chair, I move that the following legislative concept, LC, be introduced as a committee bill, LC 3341, dated January 25th, 2013.
Thank you. Representative Bentz has moved that LC 3341, dated January 25th, be introduced as a committee bill. I'll make the standard reference to the fact that if this bill is introduced and if it comes back to the to this committee, no one supported this motion, indicates any support of the LC or the bill if it comes back. With that, is there any discussion of the motion? I don't see any objection to the motion. I don't see any. Motion carries. And close the work session on introduction of committee measures. And open an informational meeting on Business Development Department, better known as Business Oregon. We have the director, Tim McCabe. This is one of the two agencies that's really kind of in our in the title of our committee, so I thought it'd be a good place for us to start, understand what the department does, and use some of the background that we had on Monday. So, Director McCabe, thanks for coming.
Yeah, I've got Karen here.
Chair Reed, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tim McCabe. I'm director of the Oregon Business Development Department, known as, doing business as, Business Oregon. Before I get started, I'm going to give you an overview of my department. For most of you, this is going to be very redundant, so I know you know what we do, but for those of you that are new to the committee, this is more for you, and I'm more than happy to entertain questions as we go along. I do want to give you a little tidbit, a little factoid here. One of you was one of the original business development officers for this department way back in the 1980s, and that would be Representative Lively. He was one of the original under Governor Kulongoski's tenure while he was here, and he actually started the business development officers back then.
We appreciate hearing about that and knowing that we can count on him for some excellent questions.
I am going to refer to him for many answers. That being said, I'll just go into this. I'm going to give you an overview of the department, how we're structured, how we actually came into being the way we look today, some of our programs, the things we do, and how we work with communities and businesses throughout the state. So our mission, in very simple terms, is to help Oregon businesses grow. It's pretty self-explanatory, and we work very closely with them. Let me give you a little history of how we got here. In 2008, in May of 2008, Governor Kulongoski appointed me to the department and gave me instructions to restructure the department. We had gone through the session, the 2007-2009 session, and for those of you that were here, you know that the state was in very good shape at that time. There was a lot of money to be spread around, and what happened during that session is this department really didn't fare well in the legislative, in the budget sessions, and the governor was concerned because he had $100 million of recapitalization in the Special Public Works Fund. The $20 million was allocated for that. He had $15 million allocated for workforce development. Nothing was allocated for that. So in basically the five POPs that the governor put forth, only one of them got partially funded. And his feeling was in those times, while they were good economic times, they weren't always going to be good economic times, and he felt that an investment should be made to continue the work that had been done. So he asked why that happened, and what it turned out was the department couldn't successfully explain what it did and how it did it. The budget was roughly $425 million, and all of those dollars were tied to jobs and job creation, when the fact was 80% of it was for infrastructure. So what we did under the governor's direction was we went around the state. Lynn Schessler, my deputy director, Paul, whom you've all met, my legislative counsel joined me along with other staff. We went out through around the state and solicited opinions and thoughts about what we should do. And I have to say my first trip to Baker City on this trip was when I got to meet Representative Bentz. And it was an insightful journey.
Yes, it was.
You were new to the legislature at that time, if I remember correctly.
Representative Bentz.
Yes, I was, and it was an interesting dialogue, and I learned a lot.
As did I.
A lot of it actually was a great meeting, and I really appreciated the effort you made in taking the concepts, difficult ones, to the rural parts of the state. It was a worthwhile exercise, and we appreciated it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, we did travel extensively and solicited a lot of input, and we really did get some good ideas. The good thing about those trips was we found out what wasn't working, what people felt we could do better. They didn't have the answers on how to do it better, but it needed to be fixed. And that was really the one thing that came out of those trips, that we had a lot of room to improve. So after that, in 2009, we entertained ideas, everything from taking the infrastructure department and moving it into another agency, whether it was DAS, some people thought it would be better in housing. What we really came, and this was with Lynn's insight and many others, that we felt that infrastructure was in the right place. It was not being managed correctly. So with that, we created the Infrastructure Finance Authority. We took the decision-making outside of the department and put it in the hands of the stakeholders. That's the cities, the counties, special districts, ports, the treasurer's office, everyone who had a vested interest, and we tasked them with making a plan, regional plans around infrastructure, rather having individual communities compete for these funds. We created a board that helped them make those decisions, and they come to that board now, and it's been a huge success. So in 2009, we took that before our commission, and they approved it. In July of that year, it was passed, House Bill 2151, where we reorganized the department, renamed it. And in October, we launched OregonForBiz.com, a whole new website. The reason I emphasize that, and I encourage you all to go look at it, if you'd like to know what we're doing in your respective districts, you can go on there and look specifically at your district and see the things that we are doing there, whether it's infrastructure or working with businesses and all the other things. We update it regularly. We put our success stories on there. The reason we took it off the state's website is because there was too many restrictions on the state side that we couldn't do, and I thought marketing this state and the accomplishments of the agency was extremely important because most people didn't know we were even out there doing these things. So the website was a huge success. So our strategies to drive growth going forward and to implement the state's business plan are threefold. We're based around business growth, and our key on this is to work with existing Oregon companies to help them grow. I use the figure 90%. It's probably higher, like 95%. People were under the impression that our sole purpose here was to recruit new industry into Oregon, and And as Representative Lively knows, when the BDOs were established, that was one of the primary objectives. Well, we've evolved. We still do that, and I'm not saying the evolution was necessary. It just kind of happened. But we concentrate on existing businesses to make sure that they're healthy and growing and staying in Oregon, because that's where the true job growth comes from. It's not from bringing in new industry. While we still do that, it's the existing companies that we feel have the greatest opportunity, and we focus on traded sector businesses. We have a global strategies department, which we reformatted and realigned and brought in with Pacific concentration on the Pacific Rim. Great opportunities now for Oregon exports in China and for growth coming from Japan in industrial needs and manufacturing over here. So we're seeing great opportunities, and our international team, which I'm going to get into, has done some amazing things over the last 2 years. And our third, and as important as everything else, is our infrastructure development. If the communities don't have a good infrastructure, these businesses can't prosper. So it's extremely important. Any questions so far? Am I talking too fast? Or
doing just fine.
You're
I think we're just accumulating the questions.
I haven't seen any quizzical looks. To address core business needs, these are the things we focus on. We offer technical assistance and development to businesses as well as communities in attracting or positioning themselves for businesses. Export assistance, as I talked, and I'll go into some of these. Access to capital. Innovation. Some of you are on the Oregon Innovation Council. It's something that we started in 2003 and that has grown to, I won't say beyond our expectations. It's everything we'd hoped for and much, much more, though. We've done a great job. Workforce development, we concentrate heavily, and we work with community colleges and the communities to have a trained workforce around specific industries. And land readiness. How do we do it? Well, we're very reliant. Some of you know I've just met with you in the last couple days. Our staff, our business development officers, number nine, there are nine of them statewide. Representative McEwen, you know Chris.
I do.
Claflin. I think many of you probably know your business development officers in the regions where you reside, and they're vital to what we do, but they don't do it alone. We work very closely with our regional partners. We work with legislators, private lenders, industry associations. We're very reliant on those partners because, as I said, with only nine business development officers statewide, we can't know everything that's going on. So we rely heavily on our community representatives and community associations to help us spread the word on what we do. This is an overview and a very simplified org chart. We're broken into two divisions, as I said, our Business Innovation and Trade and our Infrastructure and Finance Authority. Around the Business Innovation and Trade, we concentrate on four different areas. One, these are our funds that we manage, the Strategic Reserve Fund and our Industry Competitiveness Fund. The Strategic Reserve and Business Expansion Program are two funds that return positive return on investment. The Strategic Reserve Fund in 2009 had a 300% return on investment. By that I mean we use those dollars when new companies come into Oregon, and we tie them to employees and the wages, and we give them the money on a two-year contract based on the number of employees and wages. So in that two-year period, we get that money back. So everything over and above that is pure profit for the state. So we make investments in Oregon. The business expansion program is based on 150% of the average wage, a minimum of 50 employees. New employees need to be brought on board. It's tied to a two-year contract. After that 2 years, we've got 100% of the money we've invested in that company back, and it's revenue to the general fund after that. Our Industry Competitiveness Fund is a fund we use to help local communities with their regional strategies. We also help fund the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, as well as Oregon Trade Promotion Program. So these programs are working, and I'll give you an example. This is one that's right here in Staten, Oregon. Mastercraft came to us. They were located in Wilsonville, Oregon, at the time. They secured a contract with IKEA. They had 70 employees, but they had no place to grow. So one of our business development officers, one of our recruitment officers, Bruce Laird, who started when Representative Lively started, and Bruce just retired last month, but and he was from Coos Bay. Marty knew Bruce, and he came to Bruce and said, what can you do? So we got together with our partners here in Salem, SEDCOR, and we went to work on Mastercraft's needs. We knew of a facility in Staten. We brought in $125,000 of strategic reserve funds. They hired 100 additional people. They went from 70 people to 170 people. We found them a new facility, and they're still growing. Okay, the Staten gets set up. They're trained workers. The furniture is going out the door. It's amazing, and if any of you would like to take a tour of this facility, I'll set it up. I highly recommend it. It truly is amazing. But that was 100 new jobs. They were poised to leave the state. It was just fortunate that Bruce knew Marty. Marty asked him, and we went to work on it because Vancouver was really, really recruiting them heavily. So it's these relationships, again, that enabled us to do that. Our business finance programs, I talked about it. We have direct loans through the Oregon Business Development Fund. But more importantly is our loan guarantee program, our credit enhancement fund. This is money that we hold in reserve. Right now it's about $7 million. We do not loan the money. We guarantee the loans for the banks, 80% of those loans. So on that $7 million, we currently have roughly $29 million in loans out there. But in addition to that, we had the state small business incentive program. We received $16 million from the federal government with the caveat that we would leverage $10 for every dollar they gave us over the next 5 years, and we're on track to do that. In this instance that I'm going to show you, we were just recognized. I believe Representative Reed was there. It was in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I want to quote this. Business Oregon's work as a state agency is cutting edge, innovative, and an example of best practices in our industry. We're quite proud of what we've done with those federal funds. We've got them out the door faster than any other state in the union. That money is being put to work, and we are averaging over $10 for every dollar we're guaranteeing. So it's a great one. And this example is a great one where those came into play. This is in Representative Nathan's region. It's Ninkasi. Mm-hmm. They came to us again and talked about their business plans and put together a resource package. We put together a package specifically designed for them. And I'm proud to say it's not just because of us, but we're helpful in this. This is the fastest growing brewery in the United States. Ninkasi came to us. We went to work and we did three finance deals for them. Initially, we did a $500,000 loan in 2010, an additional $400,000 in 2011, and a $50,000 strategic reserve fund to help train their employees and purchase equipment. Okay. Again, since we started working with them, they've got 57 new jobs since 2009, and I have no doubt they're going to continue to grow. And I'm hoping it continues, that growth continues here in Oregon. And again, that was all through our business finance programs. Any questions so far? Mm-hmm. You can applaud anytime. another one I talk, Oregon Innovation Council. Again, I know Representative Reed's been on this for quite a while. We have three signature research centers. The Oregon Innovation Council, I won't dwell on this. The fact is, in the $58 million that you as legislators have invested in this program, we've leveraged over almost $500 million additional dollars. It's helped over 300 Oregon companies do research, spun off new companies, new products. Amazing things are coming out of this. And Skip Rung, the director of ONAMI in Corvallis, the Oregon Nano and Microtechnology Institute, was just recognized as one of the six winners for the Science State Science and Technology Institute. So that's huge. You know, if you think about it nationwide, there's six winners every year, and Skip won that. So it was a super accomplishment, and he's done some amazing things, ONAMI has. Just to give you one example, this was one of our business development officers. Northwest Unmanned Vehicles came to him. Unmanned Air Vehicles came to Tom at the time, and they were having a problem with their fuel system because they were using these drones in Afghanistan, and they could not stay aloft because they used jet fuel, and they couldn't stay aloft for the necessary time to do the surveillance and reconnaissance that was necessary. So Tom took them to ONAMI, and they started doing some research and development for them and brought in Hewlett-Packard, and they developed a new fuel injection system utilizing Hewlett-Packard's inkjet technology, and it more than tripled these aircraft's ability to stay aloft in those conditions. Not only did it do that, they resulted in some growth and 53 new jobs, and it's grown much more since then. So drones are becoming...
And in fact, it's perhaps worth mentioning as a preview for the rest of the committee that when we hear from Oregon Inc., that very industry is a part of the Oregon Innovation Plan that we'll be considering real opportunities beyond that specific company, but around that whole cluster.
Thank you, Chair Reed. As I talked about our export assistance, we have what's called the Oregon Trade Promotion Program, and we've been doing this for a lot of years. And I have to tell you, it's a paltry amount, okay? It's $162,000. And what we did with that money over the last 5 years since we restructured was we give grants to help people. We help identify shows for Oregon company so they can get the highest return on investment. We set up these shows from Hong Kong to South America to Paris, France, an air show there. We give them $2,500 to help defray their costs and set up a booth, and we'll get multiple companies to participate in this. It was a very small amount, but we were very successful. The federal government under President Obama, as you may remember 2 years ago, he challenged the country to double their exports. So we took that to heart, and we applied for the largest amount we could get, $375,000 from the federal government, and we had to match that with our $162,000. The first year of the program, we helped 90 companies at 45 different trade shows in 15 different countries. Okay, again, we were recognized nationally as the best state for this program. So I was quite proud of it. We then went back and we've gone after an additional $460,000 to do this again. We right now have helped over 100 companies this go around, and it's growing. I'll give you one example. It's my concern. What I want to talk about is that STEP program ends. There are no more federal dollars, and we have been so successful that our Oregon Trade Promotion, we have put extra money in our budget so we can continue doing this. The growth for some of these Oregon companies, and it's not products you'd think about. These aren't typical products that you think about every day and you go to the store to buy. A good example is Roughware. They're out of Central Oregon. They make clothing for dogs, for outdoor dogs and guide dogs and service dogs. We took them to a trade show. They came to us, and we helped them set up a booth at a trade show in Japan and one in Europe. And without going into all the detail on this, we did all the legwork for them. Their initial show in Japan netted them a $25,000 order, a new order for business. Europe is going to be way more than that. But Japan's just, if you've ever been there, they dress their dogs in Japan. So it's a huge market, and it was an easy show for us to recognize, and we have great representation over there. But Oregon companies have realized almost $11 million now in exports just this year that weren't here before, and over 70 of those companies have never exported before. Okay. The other thing we work with businesses are industrial land certification. This was a program that we started in 2003. We've certified 73 sites statewide. Most of those now have some form of development going on, and now we're going into the second round. We're concentrating on brownfields because it was easy to find those first 73 sites. But now we're getting into sites that have wetland mitigation, brownfields, a number of obstacles, and it's going to become much more expensive to do this. So we're working closely with communities and our partners to make this work going forward. But since we started that program in 2003, there's been over $550 million in investments on those properties, and thousands of jobs have been created as a result. The thing about it, and I won't go into too much detail, but in 2003, I was working for a utility at the time, and we did the research for the state, and we found that on average, to get the necessary permits to develop a site in Oregon, it took 18 to 24 months, which at that time, it's just totally unacceptable. So the certified site program guarantees that if you choose that site that's certified, you can put a shovel in the ground in 180 days. That turned that around for us. And one of the first sites that I like to cite is in Lebanon, Oregon. It's now a Lowe's distribution center. That site had been on the market for 15 years. It was one of the original 12 that was certified. It was the first to go. And I have to say, Lebanon is now a growing community. It was dying at the time. So this is extremely important. And Oregon's faced now with a shortage of industrial land. We have one opportunity that requires just a little over 300 acres. There's only one site in the whole state that can accommodate it. So with these opportunities, they don't come along every day, so we have to be ready. And that's what our certified site program does. I think, and I don't want to shortchange infrastructure, and I'd welcome Lynn to come up if he wants to say more, but these things are self-explanatory. Our Special Public Works Fund, we help communities with their infrastructure needs, and with the new Infrastructure Finance Authority, we're doing it better. We're doing it faster. I'll give you some examples. On the Special Public Works Fund, recently we just helped Union County buy industrial land that they didn't have before, and then we helped bring infrastructure to it. Okay, they were sorely lacking, and these funds were used for that. On the Community Development Brock Grant, we just helped Coos Bay develop a food bank. On these are federal dollars that we can put to good use. But one of the keys, and this is what I talked about earlier, what we found when we went out there is how difficult it was to do business with the department, how long you had to wait to get loans, to get things approved. Well, we've taken our loan and our contract completion from 14 weeks down to 9.5. But believe me, that's just the contract completion. It used to take 6 to 9 months to get something done through this department. It was ridiculous. And we're the business development department. There's no excuse for that. So we've totally revamped the way we do business, and I think I know the communities are very happy now with how easy it is to come to us and get the things done that they need to have done. We did use the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership to come in and tell us and help us do that streamlining. Okay, we used the lean process in-house to make this happen. We didn't do it on our own. We rely on our partners. Our Water and Wastewater Fund, we recently worked with Astoria to get the stormwater out of their wastewater system, so it's separate from them. On the Safe Drinking Water Fund, Sandy, the community of Sandy, which is just outside of Portland, they came to us to develop their whole water system, and we suggested to them, rather than do that, you've got the Portland water system, Bull Run, right there, and there's an excess of water in that system, and Portland allowed them to tie in. We saved them millions of dollars. I can't tell you, countless months in permitting just to do what they wanted to do, and we just tied them in to the existing water resources that were available. Okay. Again, this is interesting. The EPA, and this is recent, just announced that the Pacific Northwest region, that's us, Idaho and Washington, on the Safe Drinking Water Fund, we have 103%, the highest in the country. Utilization, the average is 90%. So again, that's partnering. We don't do it alone. We work with Washington and Idaho on these projects. Okay. Our ports, the ports is part of us. We helped develop them when we came in. We noticed that there's a lot of ports throughout the state, but there wasn't a statewide plan. So what we required of the ports was to develop a statewide plan working with each other. One of the things we challenge them with is, do we need as many ports as we have? Well, obviously the answer from them was, yes, we do. We need every one of them. So, but having said that, they did figure out a much better way to work closely together. Okay, there is a statewide ports plan now, and now we're working closely with individual ports to develop their individual plans. So extremely important to Oregon and the growth because ports are important to our economy. You know, I don't think most people know the Port of Morrow. The number of goods that come out of some of these ports on the Columbia River are mind-boggling. And Morrow is truly a unique port in that they've got companies from Japan, manufacturing. They do food processing. They make potato chips for Japan, the Japan market, and ship them from Hermiston to Japan. So it's Calbee Foods, and it's very interesting. And they're going to go into partnership with Frito-Lay here and start marketing some of those products that are made here. So it'll be great growth for the Hermiston area. So again, some of the programs that are in our department that we act as a pass-through and monitor them are the Oregon Cultural Trust and the Oregon Arts Commission. Who do some amazing things. Again, I won't dwell on this because it's not something that's part of our expertise. It's just a pass-through program that we monitor for the Arts Commission and the ports, as well as Oregon Film and the recruitment of that. I don't know. I know many of you have probably been on the set now of Grimm and the other TV shows that are being filmed. And if you haven't, I will be happy to set it up. It's fascinating to watch them film these things. The things you see on TV, and when you see them film it, you're amazed at the magic of television, I'll tell you. But that has been a huge, huge success for us. They have spent millions of dollars. And I'm saying this isn't just in Portland. They use hundreds of companies from throughout the state, everywhere from Eugene to Eastern Oregon. Food catering. It's unbelievable the amount of money they spend, and I will say the Portland region has benefited because they come in and they spend a lot of money where they're at. And, you know, getting films is nice, but getting TV shows is great because they come and they stay and they spend money. So it's been a great thing, and Vince Porter, who heads up the Oregon Film, is just been a real asset for the state. So some snapshots on what this means for the state. Just in 2012, the department worked with 400 companies, and we can document all these jobs. We created 1,500 new jobs and helped to retain almost 5,000 existing jobs. These jobs have generated almost $16 million, well, actually over $16 million a year in personal income tax revenue that goes to the general fund. This is what pays for the schools. Okay, so these are investments in Oregon. Since 2007, as I said, we've invested $58 million, which has leveraged $465 million. In the governor's upcoming budget, there's an additional $25 million around the Innovation Council. And it's just a great investment in the future of this state and for Oregon companies. Our export assistance, again, we've used $313,000. We've helped over 100 companies just last year, and sales totaling $10.8 million. I want to emphasize this $10.8 million. This is sales that they didn't have before. This is money that's coming from outside the United States to Oregon that we didn't have before. And it's being invested in this state and spent in Oregon. So export sales are extremely important to this and to diversify our economy. We're very reliant on our agricultural exports and high tech, but we feel if we can help these small companies realize the growth, we can double this in no time. So, and we're aimed at doing just that. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
First one is how you developed that very, very slick presentation. That's a little different than than the standard PowerPoint. Hopefully that was a Oregon technology. Oregon intellectual energy.
It is a good program.
Very nice. Other questions? Representative
Doherty. This is not a question, but a comment. I appreciate you in your presentation highlighting a little bit the Oregon Cultural Trust. I'm the board member for the House in that. And I think it's one of those things that people think, oh, well, it's just grants. But it creates jobs. It creates motivation for local communities, small communities. And it's not just the arts, but it's heritage, it's culture, it's everything else. And so they really have done quite a bit of work, and I like where you've highlighted that 19,000 jobs are directly created and attributed to the culture sector of Oregon, which is something we don't always think of in business, but it's huge. That and the film.
Right. Representative Doherty, chairs and members, and I didn't mean to gloss over it. It is extremely important. That's why we put it in the materials. I wish I could speak more directly to it and the benefit, but I know if you go out there and look at it, and Chris Darcy, who heads it up, it does just a fantastic job of getting the word out there. So it really is beneficial, not just the arts and the culture, but as Representative Doherty said, thousands of jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's been expanded quite a bit.
Correct.
Thank you.
Representative Davis?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for your very slick presentation.
I meant that in a positive way, by the way.
You're in an enviable position from many of our perspectives because you get the unique opportunity to see Oregon businesses working and Oregon's economy working on a day-to-day basis. And I'd love to just hear some of your comments on what you see as Oregon's strengths right now, opportunities, sort of from the 40,000-foot view. You've been down in the weeds, but you're also up at that level as well. So strengths and then maybe some opportunities.
Yeah. Representative Davis, co-chairs and members of the committee. That's a good question. One of the strengths we've got is our workforce. I say that because in the recessionary times, there a lot of people lost jobs, and so we've got a very talented workforce out there. In addition to that, Oregon's one of those states, in Portland, a city in particular, where people come without having a job. They move in because that's where they want to be. So there's this young, talented workforce out there that we're trying to capitalize on and get the word out that we have this asset. The other strength, the thing that I see happening, and it's around the programs, the federal dollars, the SSBCI dollars that we've got. Oregon businesses need the infusion of capital. We're talking small loans. We're talking loans of $25,000 up to $500,000. Not the ones the banks are looking for. The ones that we're loaning money now on inventory so that they can get the orders out the door. We're loaning money on working capital because it's what they need. And I'm saying this is one of our strengths because the orders are there, and the small manufacturers that are dotted throughout this state are seeing some real opportunities. So that The strength is these federal dollars that have been made available to us are really, without those, we would have really been in a tough spot. Mm-hmm. But good things are happening. I'm just a representative. I'm very optimistic on what's happening in Oregon and the interest we're getting from Japan right now with what's going on in Japan, where they've got high power costs. The strong yen against the dollar they can't afford to manufacture in Japan right now. So our over 100-year relationship with that country has enabled us to go over there and present this. We go every year and do a Doing Business in Oregon seminar in April. We have over 100 Japanese companies doing business in Oregon right now, and I know in the next year we're going to have 5 more. Mm-hmm. And these are big companies that can grow here. So we, our real strength is we're known out there as a state that's open to do business, and it's easy to do it here. Did that answer you?
Thank you.
Let's go to Representative Benson, then Representative Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, I want to thank you for all your hard work. It's really appreciated. And
thank you.
Any of what I had to say, have to say, that's negative, isn't intended as a reflection on your efforts, because I think they've been excellent. We did hear yesterday, though, that since 2000, our income per capita adjusted for inflation here in Oregon is exactly $1 greater than it was in 2000. So we've had 10 years of no gain. And so these efforts that the department has made, I'm happy for them, because goodness knows what it might be but for them. But there's a, and before I go off on this other tangent, I want to comment on the positive remarks you made about exports and the need for better access to our port, which is an issue we'll be taking up Monday afternoon when we talk about the interstate project. So maybe you could comment on that in a little more detail when I'm done with my lengthy question. Here it is. We have, in the 5 years I've been here, I've noticed that we are very good at creating process and then asking people as clever as you to figure out how to fight their way through it. And thank God we have you. But the process and the benefit from it sometimes is challenging to measure. And I have observed in my small communities, in the vast part of the state I represent, that the process is unaffordable. And it's not possible for these small communities, even when they ask for your help, to dig up the money to overcome the obstacles we've imposed upon them, whether that's land use planning, or whether that's the Clean Water Act, federal, whether it's all of these things. And they are pricing small communities out of the market. And this means, and what I say is undeniably true. It can be seen by anyone that spends the time to drive through any part of rural Oregon. And what we do is we come here and we find money and we rush over and we do some sort of a kind of a triage on these folks, and then we rush back here. And we wait for another scream for help. And so I'm happy for the efforts that you've made, but we need a broader approach, a better measure of the good that's coming from these regulations and the bad that's occurring right before our eyes. The bad is poverty, and not enough money for education, and a lack of our taking appropriate account of the resources we have available. So my question is, what should we be doing with the resources we already have that we aren't? That's one. Here's the second. What can we do to help these small communities fight their way through better the rules, particularly as to the lack of industrial land? Because that's the most obvious. There are many others. And we have 1,000 excuses why we don't have it. But in Little Ontario, where I know your department is helping, we have 75 acres of available industrial land in a county with 6 million acres available. Something's wrong with that picture. And I know everyone's working to try to fix it, but it's all these wonderful things that are happening, they're great. But in the meantime, days are going by and money is not being spent on education for kids that should be, because they don't have the jobs, because we don't have the industrial land. So what I'm asking is for your help in this session to help this committee pass some legislation to get industrial land. And I don't mean more money necessarily to clean up that which is a brownfield in Portland, although I think it's a great idea, and I'll support it. I'm talking about the millions of acres that are available but are barred by an unfortunately placed urban growth boundary. So I'm asking, can we have that support?
Absolutely.
And follow up?
Please.
And it's so important that we be able to show people the cost that we are incurring every day while we try to fight our way through these rules. Because I don't know what can overcome that crisis of process that we're encountering, unless it's the fact that we're damaging little kids. I think that's the only thing that will overcome it. Because otherwise we'll have all kinds of justifications for why process is great and necessary.
Well, yeah, Representative Benz, members of the committee, you make a very good point. I don't have a simple answer, you know, but I can give an example, and I think we talked about it yesterday, and I talked about Japan. We see opportunities, okay, and one of the opportunities we saw, we were talking to a company, it's a food processor in Japan. They process a bean, okay, it's a unique bean, it's called an Azuki bean, and they were processing them in China. Well, things are changing in China. There's an enormous amount of uncertainty going on there, but also their costs are rising. And the quality of the product was deteriorating while it was going up. You know, the product quality was going down, so costs were going up. So, again, we have this relationship over in Japan. They came to us and said, what can we do? Well, we actually took them to a farmer in Ontario. We took the beans out there. At first, they wanted to find out if they could grow these beans here, which we were pretty confident they could, and they did. Okay, this is a huge product in Japan. Well, along with that, if they found out they could grow them here, they're going to start processing them here. And what we found in Ontario, we didn't have a spot for them. Okay, exactly what you're talking about. So the long roundabout way of getting to what you were talking about is extremely important to us as well. If we can bring these companies here and we have these opportunities but we can't accommodate their needs, why are we doing this? You know, so we have to figure it out. And the industrial lands, as I stated, is a huge problem for Oregon. It's not unique to Ontario. We've got to figure that out. I couldn't agree more.
Thank you. We do have one bill in the committee now that has to do with industrial land that I hope we're going to be able to take up and find a good solution for it. And there are a number of other bills that are related to industrial land in the Land Use Committee that have subsequent referrals to our committee. So I'm hopeful that some of them will make their way to us and we'll be able to take up that conversation as well.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. A quick point to help illuminate something for me, because I plan to talk about it. Seems like I ought to be proud of it. You mentioned on one of the slides in the first half of the presentation that we've received national recognition as the best program, the best state program in the U.S. And I think it was global marketing, but I'm trying to remember what it was.
We were recognized, Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, we were recognized for our use of the federal funds on the state small business incentive program.
State small business incentive.
And Representative Reed was at that convention in Atlanta.
That's right. Yeah, the downside of this is when you go to these conventions with the intention of trying to find good ideas from other states and your own state is recognized, it's harder to find, well, what are you guys doing there? Good ideas.
I don't think that's such a bad thing.
Obviously, I was proud. Do you have a further follow-up or question?
And Representative Nathanson, we did get recognized on the exports, and I'll get you that figure because I don't know it off the top of my head.
I'd like that as well. Thank you.
Okay.
I wanted to follow up on Representative Benz in terms of taking some threads from our conversation in the last meeting. We heard a pretty consistent theme from the economists and experts we heard from then about the difference between short run and long run and the choices we make having short run and long run impacts They focused a lot on long run, the ways that we change standards of living and so on. And I hope that this committee will keep an eye on that. But obviously, we have a lot of legislation that's going to have impacts in the short run. Can you talk about your view of that relationship between short run and long run?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my view, our long run, long term goal is on the export side of things. Again, I'm not complaining about the budget. We have to be realistic on what we're capable of doing. So what we focus on the long term is looking for new opportunities to diversify Oregon's economy. But what we do day in and day out is concentrate on the short term. What's going on? These loans that we make and the everyday, day-to-day business that we do is exactly that. These companies, as I said, they need working capital. They can't keep their doors open, you know, and the big banks aren't loaning it to them without our loan guarantee program. So we concentrate on the short term. That, to me, is the solution. The long term won't take care of itself, but if we can keep the businesses alive and growing, we'll get there. But we've got to concentrate on the companies that we have today to make sure they stay healthy. I'm not saying to the exclusion of all else. We have to look for that growth, but it's what we do every day. I don't know if that answers. I didn't hear the economist, so.
What I think that's helpful for me is sort of the counterpoint of the two. My view is that we shouldn't be focusing exclusively on either, and the balance of the short and the long run is important, so that's very helpful.
Well, Representative Reed, Chair, members of the committee, I think our long term is really around the Innovation Council and that, and we have now research facilities that weren't here 6 years ago, and as I said, these have helped over 300 Oregon companies. They couldn't afford to do this research themselves. They can't grow in a high-tech field if they can't do this stuff, and they don't have the resources to do it, so the state's made those resources available. I mean, we've got some labs now, one, the Loke lab down in Eugene, which is right there on the campus. Mm-hmm. It's second to none in the world. Amazing. And this is, using products that are made right here in Oregon from FEI. These are electron scanning microscopes that most people don't even know are made in Hillsboro. And we were in danger. I'm sorry, get me started. But they actually invested in Philips in the Netherlands, and they bought, this is FEI out of Hillsboro, bought the electron scanning microscope arm of Philips in the Netherlands. And I got to tell you what, the Netherlands, as a nation, began courting them. You know, well, why are you over there when you could be here? And we have a research and development park that we finance as a nation, and you're more than welcome. Well, we took the governor over, you know, to meet with them, and we met with them in the Netherlands, and Oregon's a good place. They're still here, but this is what we're faced with. I mean, it's highly competitive world out there, and we've got some great companies here in Oregon. And if we don't do everything we can to help them grow, Novellus out in Tualatin, I talked with Representative Davis, we were in danger of losing them, but they in turn expanded here rather than doing it in Northern California because we worked with them and we figured it out what we could do to help them grow here. But if we don't have those resources, if we can't reach out to these companies and continually have a dialogue with them with only 9 business development officers, I'm reliant on our community and our partnerships out there to make sure that we're aware of this stuff. But we really, Representative Reed, in my estimation, is need to concentrate on what we've got and help them grow and make sure they're happy here. We have a great business tax structure, okay? We have the single sales factor here. These are things that we have to protect and keep, because if we start tampering with the assets we've got, we're going to lose a lot.
Appreciate that. That's a little bit of, I'll preserve my question, Representative Gorsuch.
Just a quick question. You mentioned just having 9 development officers. What would be a more optimal number?
Representative Gorsuch, members of the committee, I would like to do, if possible, I'd like to get it 15.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we could then look at the way we disperse them across. I've got one business development officer, and granted, Malheur County is one of the most underdeveloped, and the opportunities aren't there right now. But without having somebody out there all the time, you do Rick Minster. Great, we lost. He retired, but we've got Melissa Drudge, who's equally talented. But she's traveling around a territory that's the size of New England. You know, when you look at Eastern Oregon, I would love to have two or three people out there to help with the things you're faced with, to come up with ideas, you know, but get more dispersion around the state. You know, when we look at Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas County, we have some great partnerships there, mm-hmm. you know, that we are in touch. We're part of the business organizations. We know the businesses there. We concentrate on small businesses, but it's rural communities where we really need it. If we look at it, we've got one in Klamath Falls that goes all the way up to Roseburg. You know, it's tough to give the communities the attention that they need.
Do you have a follow-up?
I do. Are there any local or even private groups like chambers of commerce that do this sort of attempt at development mm-hmm. at the county level, perhaps?
Oh, they do. We do work with chambers of commerce, and absolutely, yeah, and ports.
Representative McEwen, no,
Mr. McCabe, it's very nice to see you. I think the first time you and I crossed paths, we were in Japan.
Yeah.
It was on a trade mission in 2004 working on some issues that dealt with ports, and it's nice to see you again.
Thank you.
A long time. I really enjoyed this presentation. It gave me a real global view of what's going on in the state. I'm from the southern part of the state, so my perspective is relatively narrow at times. But it would be interesting to me to know if through your lens, looking at the natural resource-based economy that we have in the rural areas of the state comes into this conversation. And I'm thinking of two or three things in particular. We have in our area a new mining operation. It's a global economy for zircon and garnet and a particular type of a ferrous material and chromite that they're mining that has specific impacts on industries around the world. And there's also a lot of talk in the wood products industry about different uses for the cellulosic material that's coming out of the forest, and some of it has to do with power production, but there are other uses also that are being discussed. And I'm wondering if you have some insight as to how that economy fits into the work that you do.
Representative McEwen, members of the committee, that's a great question that I'm going to dodge.
What have I done, Chair Reed?
You know a lot, Representative.
My first question.
No. Don't let it be your last.
No, on the wood product side, what we're doing is I'll go back to the other part, but we're looking for opportunities for existing companies here in Oregon on specialty wood products. We've just started introducing those to Saudi Arabia, which was fascinating to us. We took it over there at a show. It was unexpected to them. They never thought about wood over there as a component in building, and they're enamored with it now, and we see some great potential. The interesting thing over there, and the reason we picked it, is there's countries over there that can decide to build a city. You know, they build cities because they want to. So that was one thing, and we're very optimistic on the potential that's there. As far as the forest products and the biosciences, and I'm not versed on that. It's again, I don't want to sound like I'm playing our resources. We really concentrate on what we know, and that is something that we're just getting to know.
Okay.
So sorry to be
it's okay.
I wish I could answer.
We may have an opportunity to have a hearing on bioscience generally, and I can help you offline connect with some people who probably have good answers as well.
And Sherry, I just don't want to lose sight of the fact that in our rural communities that these are areas of conversation, and
yes.
some of it has to do with manufactured wood pellets for power production or for home heating. It has to do with how you can process them in a different way so they can be used in it.
We have done that, the wood pellets, and we've helped with that with federal monies.
Yeah, there have been some ideas that have to do with industrial land and use and industrial land that's available in areas of the state that it's there. We're just not taking advantage of it. Thank you.
That's a theme I think we will return to for sure. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Representative McEwen's question, I want to follow up on it just a bit, but I also want to comment on your remark about the person that took Rickminster's place having an area the size of New England.
I might exaggerate a little.
Actually, I think you understated it. I'm sure you did. The space from Hermiston, which people say is Eastern Oregon, it's 3 hours from there to Ontario, 200 miles. And so Hermiston is Central Oregon. And all of that space from, just draw a line straight south of Hermiston and go straight toward Idaho or Nevada, is not being utilized. And it's the analogy I've used many times is that we've taken a 40-year nap, and we've waited correctly, I might say, for technology to catch up with the possibilities of extracting the types of minerals Representative McEwen is talking about, gold or uranium in my district, in a way that's environmentally positive. And we now, that 40 years has gone by. It's still there. But to me, your department might want to, and maybe you are, willing to support my bill, which asks for an audit of all the minerals in this state, because 90% of the uranium for America is imported, and yet we have one of the largest deposits in Oregon. And so why isn't our department pointing out these economic opportunities? Because we got a boatload of them, and or bigger than that, bigger than a boat.
Several boats.
And this is not a situation where we have to destroy our environment to enjoy the jobs and the help for our children that could be happening right now if we would simply utilize the assets available. And so this committee is going to get sick of hearing this, but the truth of it is we have an opportunity to help, and we're not taking advantage of it. I see our department as a huge help in getting us away from that long-term trend downward, which we saw just day before yesterday in this committee up on that board, when the economist said, something's wrong with Oregon. You've got a place to live, but you don't have any jobs, and your housing is too expensive. Other than that, it's great. And so we can keep the greatness with all the departments and work we've done to help, but we need to start educating our kids, and we're not doing that. That's the long-term solution, of course. Representative Gorsuch.
Kind of tying into what Representative McEwen and also Representative Benz was talking about, we know that we're facing the end of federal supports for timber dollars that have been lost in a number of counties. Is your organization or are there state agencies that are working to find solutions to replace those lost revenues?
Well, that's a very good question, Representative Gorsuch. No, we haven't been tasked with that. That's coming from the governor's office. I mean, we've got to figure it out as a state, but again,
it's a huge problem for rural sections of the state. Right?
There is a special committee of the legislature on that topic specifically, and we may decide as a committee that we want to have someone from that committee give us an update, because it obviously does impact a lot of the things we're talking about. But
I wasn't trying to put you on the spot.
No.
I just wondered if you had some insights into
that. I guess maybe when I go into this, to give you a perspective on my agency, it's 132 people. You know, it's and our expertise is in infrastructure, exports, and working with companies and in finance. That's what we do.
Representative McEwen?
But, Chair Reed, I guess to your comment, Representative Gorsuch, I think there's a nexus here, and I don't want to lose sight of it, that for us who live in rural areas, you provide a solution to a problem that we have, which is being in a recession for 30 years, not 5 years. And the ONC Forest Lands issue or the Secure Rural Schools issue, it weighs heavily on all of us who come from the ONC, the 18 counties. But we see you as an opportunity to solve the problem of the Secure Rural Schools issue, because if we can bring that manufacturing and that natural resource-based economy back in a way that's environmentally appropriate, and we can begin to put people back to work, we can solve the issue of the Secure Rural Schools or the county payments going away. And I think it's a really, in this session, I think it's a really important note that we want to not lose sight of as we move through. And I am on the committee, by the way. Yes. The ONC County's committee has been formed. We have predecessors. This has been going on a long time. There's not a lot new under the sun. I'm not sure at this point, but you will be hearing more about it. And the House and the Senate are represented on a joint committee that's looking at the issue.
That's a very articulate way of making the point, and I didn't realize that you were on the committee, so we have a perfect link already. That's great.
May I Representative McEwen and chairs and members of the committee, I will gladly take on that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I ask that you as legislators look at my budget. I'm serious too.
Mm-hmm. We're dead serious.
If I don't have the resources to do that, you know, I can't. And I'm going to give you an example. And I told you about these federal dollars that came in, the $16 million that we're using for these loan guarantee programs. When I took over this agency, our credit enhancement fund was $11 million. It's now $7 million. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I cannot leverage as many dollars today as I could 5 years ago. The reason being, why that money was taken out and used for something else, it was under the impression that holding that money in reserve, you don't need that money. The banks will loan against, because they're backed by lottery-backed bonds. Banks will not loan against lottery-backed bonds. They'll loan them against money that you're holding in reserve. Because if somebody defaults on that loan, they want their money. They don't want to wait for a bond sale. Okay, I'm only pointing this out because I'm sorry if my frustration level seems high, but it was countless times pointed out that they won't loan against it, and yet they're still taking money out of it. Mm-hmm. So in order to do the things that you're asking us to do, we need the resources to do them. If I had more people out in the field working with communities and working with businesses and communities and finding out when these jobs, where there's potential, I think we could do a whole lot better. I'll give you one more example. I was at a dinner with a company, and he was having problems with another department. I won't go into the department, who it was, but the fact of the matter is there's 50 jobs on the line, and this is in 2009, and it took them 9 months to get an answer, and the answer was no. So he came to me. The answer shouldn't have been no. When it came right down to it, the answer turned out to be yes. So if I could get more resources and more people in the field to find, if I hadn't met this guy at dinner, this company would have left Oregon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I welcome the challenge, and I totally agree with you. It's part of our responsibility to make this happen. We do create revenue for the state. You know, we are one department, and I always want you to remember, it's not like when you're investing in our department and funding us, that isn't money we're just spending. We're investing most of those funds in Oregon. Sorry, I get started.
It's okay. It's okay. We do too. Representative Parrish.
Okay, I'll wind you up some more. I'll just start off by saying, you know, Representative Berger's favorite expression, you know, we shouldn't be eating our seed corn, and if we're not spending money, we're not making money. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. Are you maintaining a list of exits from Oregon, and not just people closing their business, but because that happens? I mean, I own a business, businesses up and start and, you know, close and do all kinds of things. But are you tracking the ones that are leaving? Like, do you have a mechanism at your office to pull the list of business from, you know, the Secretary of State, and then, you know, saying, okay, which ones dropped off, and then did those businesses relocate somewhere else and actually have firm numbers?
Representative Parrish, members of the committee, yes, we track that through the Employment Department.
Okay.
We work closely with them, but contrary, I'm not saying businesses aren't leaving Oregon. Headquarters are leaving Oregon.
There you go.
But the businesses are still here, and there's a reason, you know, it's an example. You all read about Geldwin, mm-hmm. probably. Geldwin didn't leave Oregon. The decision-making for the company left Oregon.
And where they filed their tax return left Oregon.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So it's, again, I want to emphasize, we have one of the best business tax structures in the nation from a personal income tax level. We're not as good as a lot of other places. And when you're competing in a global market, if one of the toughest competitors out there is Texas, when you've got no personal income tax, you know, their business tax is far superior. That's why they're growing, why Austin is growing, and they know what they've got. And my biggest fear is these high-tech companies we've got here, when they start expanding, that they expand there and not here. I know that didn't answer your question, but yes, we track those very closely.
Can you bring those numbers? Sorry, follow-up. Yeah, can you bring those numbers back to us at some point?
Sure.
Interested in hearing it. Thank you.
So I want to pick up on a point you were making a bit earlier, recognizing that this committee is not a Ways and Means committee. We hear you on the budget point, and two of us are members of the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee of Ways and Means. No, it's perfectly fine to make that point, and all of us do have influence in the Ways and Means process, even if we don't get to sit on it. But setting that aside for a moment, I think that is the obvious answer to the question I'm going to ask, so I'm going to make that ineligible temporarily. Aside from budget, what would you identify as the 3 to 5 things that this committee ought to be focusing on in the session that can help you do your job better and more effectively?
Representative Reed, can I actually get back to you on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'd really like to give that some thought,
sure.
Frankly. I don't want to just off the top of my head start reciting, because I think there's probably a lot of ways you can help us.
That's no problem. Appreciate it.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair Reed, for that question. And the question I'd like to add, as a small business attorney myself, one of the largest challenges my clients experience is the first hire. Going beyond being a sole proprietorship, whether it be incorporating, hiring your first one or two individuals, I mean, that is an enormous leap for someone to go beyond working from their own computer in their house to leasing space, hiring an employee, workers' compensation insurance, and to Representative Bent's point about process, it is the process that is scary for people. And I would just append on that question, what can we do, and there are some bills that I'm working on, in making that first step for new and small businesses in Oregon as easy as possible, as straightforward as possible. One simple challenge that my clients face is, and that I'm attempting to address, if you want to make that first hire in Oregon, there is not a single website you can go to that says, give me all the forms you need.
Yeah, there is. The portal.
We have all the forms. They're on 6 or 7 different websites, and my clients have to call around to different departments, whether it be tax forms, mm-hmm. workers' compensation forms, etc. And so streamlining a process like that is something that is simple. It doesn't really cost anything because the forms are already out there on 6 other websites, and it can make that process easier. And so I would just add a process question. What are processes that we can improve and streamline that are not going to have significant revenue impacts? So,
yeah, Representative Davis, I've got a feeling I'm going to defer to Representative Doherty on this.
Yes, Representative Doherty.
Last session, this is the one thing that we did work on various committees, and the Secretary of State has a one-stop shop for a lot of these business And there's literally one website that they can look at a lot of these things. You know, where do I go for this form? All of the forms are to be on that, and so on and so forth. So I think that it's already in the works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came from the Secretary of State with, you know, businesses had to go here and here and here and here mm-hmm. and here. Now they go to one place.
Well,
and so the process is there.
There's no question that, that there may be opportunities for improving.
There's always room for improvement.
But I laud the Secretary of State for that website because that has been a huge improvement.
So at least it's in the works from another agency with another budget, Mr. Cave.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gorsuch.
One other question. There is also the issue of the difference between state operations and then the issues that occur, and I think we've alluded to it a little bit, at the county and the city level. And I know we don't really, the state doesn't have jurisdiction over cities and counties in terms of how they do their fees and their planning departments and everything, but is there a mechanism for at least discussion with cities and counties about how they do a lot of these things and some of the fees that they that seem to be prohibitive?
Yeah, Representative Gorsuch, members of the committee. That's one of our business development officers actually do that. They work with, when we're working with companies that are growing or coming into the state, we work very closely with the cities and counties where they're going to locate. Okay. And there's some excellent communities in this state that can respond to the need and streamline their permitting process to accommodate business needs. Going back to Representative Davis's comments, the fear factor on these companies is huge. What we find, we've seen a lot of small businesses out there. These are sole proprietor, an individual owns them. Sometimes it's just that person. Yeah. Sometimes they have one or two employees. But what's fascinating to me is, for them, it's their livelihood, and they don't want to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's like they're comfortable, and they've got a niche. And it's fascinating that we tell some of these people, you could be two or three times the size that you are, and they don't want to because they're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you take that and couple it with the fear of exporting. We totally understand. They know nothing about Japan. They know nothing about China. That's what we do for them. We take care of that fear and we make it easy. But on the other one, I don't have an answer.
Yes.
I agree with Representative Dorey. The Secretary of State made a huge jump in mm-hmm. what she did to create that website that was, prior to that, not there. But it's not the end all yet.
Right.
But that's the objective.
Not to put you on the spot, Representative McEwen, but on the point about prioritization and fees and processes and so on, I think you have a couple of bills.
Chair Reed, I'd be happy to speak briefly to that. That's a very serendipitous question because before Rep. Doherty's committee on Friday of Business and Labor, I will be bringing a bill, and it asks the Secretary of State to conduct a study regarding fees imposed on small businesses by local and state agencies, and to consider implementing a program to assist small businesses in obtaining waivers or deferrals of fees as an upfront cost to try and allow them an ability to have some chance of being successful. So who knows where this bill will go, but we're talking about it, and it's Friday morning at 8:30.
Excellent. If you're not busy.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's really good. In terms of some of the discussions I've had with small business owners in my district out in East Multnomah County, many times it's not the state that's been the problem. It's been the city or the county that they have to deal with. Sometimes, I mean, amazing requests or demands of traffic studies when they're only moving their building from one side of their lot to another. So that's good that that's in the works.
Well, and this is just going to be in a conversation. You know, the Secretary of State does not have jurisdiction over counties and cities, but it's just a topic that I thought was worth bringing up.
Well, I'm looking at the clock and not seeing a lot of other new topics or questions, so I think we might wrap it up. I would say Mr. Director, you have one official alumnus of the business development officer ranks on this committee, but I hope that we can all aspire to be honorary business development officers as we seek to help you get more legitimate business development officers. We'll be searching for opportunities in our own districts and looking for your help.
We'll see if we can develop a process and have a permit for that.
A large fee.
Perfect. Well, if there are any other comments for the good of the order, close the informational meeting and remind you once again, we are not going to meet on Friday afternoon. We will be meeting as a joint committee on Monday afternoon. Keep your eyes on your email for
a meeting here.
And I am actually not certain about the location. And yeah, we'll hearing them ask.
Carry over
On Monday. Probably. And there'll be additional seating and so on in here. So 3 o'clock Monday afternoon as a joint committee. So
in F.
And if there's nothing else, we'll join the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.